Appreciate you having me.
Renee, tell us a little bit about your background. Talk about growing up with your brother, Sam.
We just had a blast. We grew up in the mountains of Pennsylvania, and, you know, we were latchkey kids. Both our parents worked, and so, you know, we had a lot of freedom to just roam around and find adventures and get into trouble, try to get out of trouble. So, you know, he was just a character, just really, really warm and funny, and we just had a great time growing up in Pennsylvania. And then when I was 10 years old, when we moved to North Carolina area, and then from there, after which I became a military wife and he joined the Marines. And so we've been all over since then.
Okay. That makes sense. You know, I grew up with three sisters and I always thought it was a brother's job to pick on sisters. Did your brother do a good job of picking on you?
Oh, he sure did. Yeah. You know, he always told me that he was going to give me a knuckle sandwich. And I know I didn't know what that was, but I know I never wanted a knuckle sandwich. And, you know, he would hold me down and he'd give me Indian burns for, you know, harassing him. And
okay.
So,
A good brother. What else can we say? Okay.
Exactly.
So when and why did he join the Marines?
Well, he always wanted to be a pilot from the time he was about 5 years old. And we thought he would become an astronaut, or, you know, his original plan was to join the Air Force. And when it came time for him to go to college, he wanted to go to Penn State, which he did. And he joined the Navy ROTC at Penn State. But after his first semester, the Marine Corps offered him a full ride if he switched to the Marines. So he could still fly jets. That was his goal. And so that's how he ended up joining the Marine Corps.
What were your feelings about him joining the military in general and the Marines in particular?
I didn't think really one way or another. You know, my dad was in the Army. You know, a lot of my uncles were in the military, Air Force, Army. My grandparents all served in World War II. I wasn't worried or anything. It just seemed like the natural course for him. And my mom had some concerns about him being a Marine. And, you know, and when I was 16 years old, when he went to college, I didn't really know the difference between Air Force, Marines, Army. You know, it wasn't really until I became a military spouse that I really learned the differences of the branches.
That makes sense. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing the book, Always My Hero, with Renee Nickel. Okay, so he became a Marine, obviously a pilot. How did your relationship with him change, or did it change, when he was now a pilot in the military and you're not?
Well, you know, I was always really proud of him. And I would brag to people, to my friends, any chance I got. My brother flies F-18s because I thought it was the coolest thing in the world that my brother flew jets. And to me, he was just my big brother, you know, sometimes annoying, sometimes, you know, just silly. Yeah. And so I never really saw him as this Marine Corps officer who flies jets. You know, a lot of people respected, because to me, he's still the guy who would punch me in the arm when I was 21 years old.
Uh-huh.
You know? And so I thought it was really cool that he flew jets. But, you know, to me, he was just still Sam. But it was hard, you know, kind of living in his shadow. You know, I kind of just lived in his shadow most of our childhood and growing up.
Okay. Talk about his time in combat.
His first tour in Iraq, it was in 2003. It was after 9/11, and he went for, you know, straight 90 days and dropped some ordnance in Iraq. And then, you know, his second tour was to Iraq. It was after he stopped flying, and he became a forward air controller with the 4th Anglico. And, you know, he didn't see too much action. And I think there's, you know, a few reasons why he went to Afghanistan for the third tour while he volunteered. But, you know, I think he wanted to see some combat. You know, he had been training for years with the 4th Anglico. And so that, you know, I mean, he ended up losing his life 5 weeks into the tour, you know. So he, you know, just unfortunately just was seeing too much combat. You know, he stepped in for one of his other Marines, so.
Okay. And talk about that now as his sister. When you found out what happened, How did you and your family respond?
When I found out, it was the morning of December 14th in 2011, and I was getting my kids ready for school. I was we were actually stationed at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida, and you know, I was planning on going shopping, and it was 7:30 in the morning, and my phone rings, and it's my mom, and I'm wondering why my mom is calling me at 7:30 in the morning. And, you know, and I was just like, oh, it's my mom, you know. So I picked up the phone. I was like, hey, Mom. You know, and she's crying hysterically. I can't even understand a word she's saying. And, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, something must have happened to my brother. Like, he must have been injured. But, you know, I had this moment where I'm relieved that he's coming home. Because in my mind, my brother was invincible, like just untouchable. You know, to me, he was and is my hero. And I just never saw him as someone who could lose his life in war. And, you know, my mom just kind of slowed her talking. And she was like, you know, Renee, Sam was killed in Afghanistan. And I just lost it. You know, I dropped the phone, fell to my knees, and you know, it was a tough day.
Of that, I believe. Folks, we're going to give away a copy of this book, Always My Hero, at the end of the show. But, Renee, I'm sure some listeners will want to buy them. I presume it's available on Amazon and lots of other places.
It is. Any online retailer has it available.
He obviously had a family, so this is our Father's Day show. I take it that he was also a darn good father.
He was an excellent father. You know, he lost his life the day before his youngest son's birthday, his sixth birthday. And, you know, and I have a daughter now who's 4 years old. I have a son who's eight. And, you know, and actually my second daughter was five at the time when Sam was killed. And you know, and every time they reach an age, you know, and I think about, you know, those boys and how they lost their dad. He had two sons. One was, you know, like I said, had just turned six, and the other one was turning eight a few months later. But he was an outstanding dad. He wanted to spend every single moment he could with them when he was home.
Sounds like Always My Hero is an appropriate title. Renee, thank
you. Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for honoring one of our nation's true heroes. He was a husband and a father, and we honor him especially on this Father's Day. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, we'll discuss the Revolutionary War with historian Nathaniel Philbrick. Then my friend Bill Steffen will discuss his combat vet dad. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. I want you to balance on one foot for 3 minutes, then balance on the other foot for 3 minutes. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
This hour of Front Lines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, health care, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your home defense tip of the week. Look like sheep and you'll be eaten by wolves. According to interviews done with armed robbers, you are far more likely to be targeted by criminals if you look weak and helpless. Carry yourself with pride and military bearing, because many criminals can spot a soft target with one glance. Stay alert and aware of your surroundings. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
American investors lost $3.7 trillion of net worth in the fourth quarter of 2018. When your portfolio's value decreases right before or early in your retirement, it can have a crippling effect. It's called sequence of returns risk, and it's a risk you simply cannot afford. We're Sound Income Strategies, and we're on a mission to help hardworking Americans transform their hard-earned savings into steady, predictable retirement income. Call now for free, no-obligation information to help you get get started on your way to steady, predictable retirement income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Investment advisory services offered through Sound Income Strategies, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Let's transform that risk into income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Sound Income Strategies, powered by the Retirement Income Store.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Front Lines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to introduce the noted author and historian Nathaniel Philbrick. He's written about our Revolutionary War. His latest book, In the Hurricane's Eye, is clearly on that topic. And it showed an aspect of the war that I knew existed but didn't realize I didn't understand. I guess you're really a naval guy, Nathaniel, so should I say welcome aboard?
Yeah, that sounds appropriate for a guy who lives on Nantucket Island. Yeah.
Okay, that works. Give us a little bit of your background into your history. How did you become interested in and involved in history in general, early history and naval history?
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up in that maritime center of the universe, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But when I was a kid, summering at my grandparents' place on Cape Cod, I learned how to sail. And for me, that was just transformative. I love the sense of independence. I just, you know, love being out on the water, the interaction with nature and all that. And I became a competitive small boat racer in college. And then when my wife and I turned 30, we had two little kids. My wife was a lawyer, and she had been working in Boston, but the commute to the house we owned outside Boston was driving both of us crazy. She got a job on Nantucket, and I was a huge fan of Moby Dick's at that point. That I've always regarded that novel as my personal Bible. And we, of course, were moving to what had been in the 19th century the whaling capital of the world,
yeah.
Nantucket. And so I became interested in the history of what was now my adopted home and would write my first work of history, A Way Offshore, A History of Nantucket. And that introduced me to the story of the Essex disaster, the whale ship that was rammed by a whale in 1820 and eventually inspired the climax of Moby Dick, which I wrote about in the heart of the sea. And so that sort of set me on the path I've been on ever since. Each book seems to evolve organically from the one before it. And I've always had kind of a maritime interest coming from the perspective I do. I think, you know, America's been defined by a sense of wilderness, and we think of that as the West. But before there was the West, there was the sea. That was really the defining wilderness of this country. And I think it's underappreciated and an important part of our history.
I've never thought about putting it the way you just did, but I couldn't agree more with you. And also, when I learned to sail, I got totally hooked on it, but I wasn't able to continue it. So you actually lived out what I sort of started wanting to do. So that's cool. Okay, let's talk about In the Eye of the Hurricane. That really, as I mentioned before, touches what were, at least to me, and I'm a bit of a historian in that area, some not realized parts of how we were winning the Revolutionary War is the right word. But how we made the movement that led to a successful end to the war.
Well, you know, even for me, a maritime guy, I didn't fully appreciate the importance of the sea to the ultimate course of the American Revolution. You know, I grew up thinking of it as kind of linear, each battle a stepping stone to the next battle that ultimately led to our victory at Yorktown. But in writing the three books about the Revolution, Bunker Hill and Valiant Ambition Proceeding in the Hurricane's Eye, I began to appreciate that it wasn't that way at all. By 1780, when Benedict Arnold unsuccessfully attempts to surrender West Point to the British, the war has devolved into a stalemate. The British, under Sir Henry Clinton, are dug into New York, you know, more than 10,000 soldiers there. Washington is based on the Hudson, basically just staring at Clinton. Washington complains that the war drags on like a cart without wheels. There's fighting happening, but most of that's to the south, and it's not good. Horatio Gates, the hero of Saratoga, loses the Battle of Camden to Lord Cornwallis. And, you know, it's just kind of we're stuck in a rut. And what Washington realized was that the only way he could win the victory that might end this thing in a favorable way for America was with the help of the French Navy. The French had joined the war in the spring of 1778. And up until that point, Britain, which was the most powerful naval force in the world, had control of the Atlantic seaboard, which meant that they could not only take any harbor or city on the water that they chose to, but they could transport their troops up and down the seaboard with relatively lightning speed. And there's just nothing Washington could do to contain them. But if the French Navy should bring over a naval force that was roughly equivalent and establish naval superiority along a section of the American coastline, that would give Washington the opportunity to win the victory on land that might end this thing. And so Washington saw this with a clarity that I think no one, even the naval people in France, completely understood as clearly as he did. And so that became his obsession throughout the alliance, was to get the French Navy up the Atlantic coast to help him out. Unfortunately, the French had their own priorities, and a lot of that involved the Caribbean. So it was a very difficult alliance from Washington's perspective.
But he sure pulled it off, didn't he?
He pulled it off. And, you know, that's another side. You know, he understood the sea, but he also was really adept at working the alliance. You know, I think we have a tendency in retrospect to think of the partnership between America and France as this, you know, benign, ideal melding of two great noble causes. But the fact of the matter, the French were only in it to take it to the British. They had been humiliated during the Seven Years' War, also known as the French and India War in America. They had lost Canada. Their ally, Spain, had lost Florida, Alabama, New Orleans to the British. And they were angry, and they wanted to take Great Britain down a peg and restore the power that France and Spain had enjoyed prior to the Seven Years' War. And so as soon as they entered the war, it turned a colonial rebellion into a world war. And Americans, I think, in their self-serving way, tend to think of the 13 colonies as the jewel in the empire's crown, when actually the real money was to be made in the Caribbean, in the sugar plantations. And so as soon as France and Spain enter the war, their navies head south into the Caribbean, and they duke it out. France gets Tobago, the British get St. Lucia. They're battling it out back and forth and leaving Washington all by himself. He's got a small French force in Newport, a small naval force with 5,000 soldiers under General Rochambeau, but the British Navy has a blockade, and they're bottled up there and unable to go anywhere. So once again, there's Washington engineering all this, and ultimately it would result in the Battle of the Chesapeake that would make possible the great victory at Yorktown.
And what an amazing story that is, and what an amazingly clear way that is presented in this book. I'm just in awe of the book. Folks, if you have not read In the Hurricane's Eye, you want to do it. Nathaniel, people can buy that almost everywhere, I'm sure. Amazon, all the bookstores, I'm sure it's out everywhere, isn't it?
It is. Penguin has just reissued the two previous books about the Revolution I've written, Bunker Hill and Valiant Ambition, and they repackaged them wonderfully. And so you can not only get In the Hurricane's Eye in paperback, but you can also get all three of them, the set. You know, it's been great to finally reach this point and see this war to its conclusion, because I've been working on it as long as the war itself. And it's been quite a deep dive and a fascinating one from my perspective.
And it's amazing how few Americans really understand our history. So three books that will help you understand as clearly as any three I could imagine, our Revolutionary War and how and why we won it.
Yeah, and, you know, I think what people don't understand is, you know, without France, we would not have won our freedom.
Amen.
We needed that alliance.
Amen. Nathaniel, thank you. Thank you for your book. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you. That book is a service to our nation because it makes clear about how our country began, truly. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. Coming from you, it really means a lot to me.
Coming up next on Front Lines of Freedom, we'll talk with Bill Steffen about his veteran father on this, our Father's Day show. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Do 18 with each arm, then stand at ease, but do stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Now is the time, and wherever you are is the place. The Citadel makes it easier to earn your degree by offering master's degrees, graduate certificates, and undergraduate degree completion programs that are entirely online. These programs are convenient for working professionals and those serving in the U.S. military. Continuing the Citadel's legacy of academic excellence, classes are held to the same high standards that consistently name the Citadel the number one master's-granting public college in the South. The Citadel. Online. On your time. Visit citadel.edu/online.
For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes at Homes for Our Troops. And thanks to our donors and supporters, this life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans. But we need you to join us, too, in completing this important mission. Please visit HFOTUSA.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was warning Iran that the U.S. will deter aggression in the Middle East. After getting a military briefing at CENTCOM in Tampa, Florida, Pompeo says that the president does not want to go to war with Iran.
President Trump had sent President Abe to take a message of his to the leadership in Iran. You have to remember, these are messages for the leadership. I think the Iranian people are being woefully misserved. But yes, we're engaged in We have been engaged in many messages, even this moment right here, communicating to Iran that we are there to deter aggression. President Trump does not want war.
And in a developing story, the president tweeting that Acting Defense Secretary Pat Shanahan will not move forward with the confirmation process so that he can devote more time to his family. He also says that Secretary of the Army Mark Esper will become the Acting Defense Secretary. This is USA Radio News.
Money. Money! Money! Money. You gotta have it. When you need it, what do you do? If you don't have a rich uncle, call LendingTree. With us, hundreds of banks compete for your business, so you'll get loans with competitive interest rates, and in some cases, with no closing costs. So here's the deal. If you need money, call us. Do you want to refinance your current loan? Are you 62 or older and interested in a reverse mortgage? Then call LendingTree now. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. We've closed over $250 billion in loans. We know what we're doing and can help you. Call right now for a free quote. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. That's 800-634-1315. NMLS number 1136.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. It's a privilege to welcome to the show a good friend, a local weatherman here in Grand Rapids, Bill Steffen. Glad you could join us today, Bill.
Hey, pleased to be here, Colonel.
Bill, this is our Father's Day show, and you've got some great stories about your great father. Talk to us about your dad.
Well, my dad was the youngest of eight kids, grew up in the Chicago area. There were seven boys, one girl in the middle. My dad became a very successful drummer back in the 1930s. He played drums, percussion, big band swing and jazz, and he said during the Depression, he could make $5 a night playing it for some of the hotels there. I could tell you some interesting stories about him. He played with Walt Perry Zader's father, who became a member of the group Chicago. But my father was part of the Northwestern University band that was asked to go to Europe to demonstrate American big band swing and jazz music back in the late 1930s. I believe it was 1939.
Wow.
So he packed up and went over to Europe. The band went over on a boat, and they played throughout Europe. But my dad came back, and he said, you know, there's this maniac over there by the name of Adolf Hitler, and we're going to be at war with this guy. He's like Napoleon. He wants to conquer the world. And he said, you know, everybody here just kind of said, ah, don't worry about him. We beat them in World War I. They're nothing. Don't worry about it. He said people just couldn't see what was coming. So my dad thought about this for a while, and he decided to quit the band and join the Army. So without telling anybody, he just walked on down and enlisted in the Army in 1940. This is before Pearl Harbor and everything. And he just came home and said, oh, by the way, I just enlisted in the Army. And his mother said, well, that's nice. You know, he kind of went on with baking bread. Eventually, he talked his brother into enlisting as well. Felix was a motorcycle mechanic at Gus's down in Chicago, downtown Chicago, probably the best motorcycle mechanic in the Midwest. And Felix wound up during the war being sent over to the country of India to work with the Brits because they needed somebody to fix motorcycles over there. So the American Army sent him over there to be with the Brits in India, and he was over there for nearly 3 years before he came back. He was married, didn't see his wife for 3 years, and they were running supplies through the jungle on motorcycles. So he was keeping the motorcycles up to date. And people ask him what he did in the Army during the war, and he says, I learned how to ride an elephant. Isn't that interesting? But he eventually came back. And another thing about Felix, which was interesting, is he had his wife send over harmonicas. And he was teaching the Indians, the natives of the country over there, to play the harmonica. So he's kind of like the father of the harmonica in India. But he said, I taught him to play all of these American songs. They'd show up, and I'd teach him how to play You Are My Sunshine and, you know, God Bless wow. America, all these songs. So that was kind of interesting. But my father goes out to Rockford, Illinois, to basic training out there. And eventually they find out that he's pretty good with a gun. So eventually he becomes a machine gun instructor. And I've got a picture that I show every year on TV. We all show pictures of our father. And most of them are, you know, older gentlemen sitting in chairs and smiling and whatnot. I show a picture of my dad with a shirt off and a machine gun. So it's kind of an interesting perspective. But he goes down to Missouri, and he spent a year living in a tent, you know, learning how to be the ultimate Boy Scout, I guess.
Yeah.
And eventually they found out he had a couple of aviation courses, so they were going to transfer him over to the Air Corps to be a pilot. And what happened was is they were doing maneuvers where they were jumping one after another off a cliff, and the guy behind my dad jumped on his back, jumped too soon, and broke his back. So all of a sudden, my dad winds up in St. Louis in traction. He says, I was sitting there in a hospital bed for about 6 weeks without moving. But he said, eventually I healed up, and then they transferred me down to Frederick Army Airfield in Oklahoma. Down there, they were doing first beat. He said even before Pearl Harbor, they were teaching French boys how to fly in B-24s. That's a Liberator bomber. A lot of those were made here at Willow Run in the state of Michigan.
Yep.
Eventually, they went to B-25s, and they didn't stall out quite as easy. And that was the only bomber that was named after a person. That was called the Mitchell bomber. You know, like General Mitchell Field over there in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yep.
And my dad said, we were just training people left and right. Eventually, they went to B-26s. One of the chief B-26 pilot instructors was a man by the name of George Gobel, who became a famous comedian.
Indeed.
And everybody knows a great segment on The Tonight Show where George Gobel comes out and talks about his service in the war. And George says, you know, a lot of people were disappointed that we weren't seeing combat, that we were just in Oklahoma. But he said, you know, we were the best squadron in the Air Corps. He said there wasn't a single Japanese plane got past Tulsa. So I thought that was kind of a – my dad had lines like that too. We took my father to the Air Zoo here in Kalamazoo.
Yes.
And there was a B-25 there. And my dad was getting a little bit of dementia at the end. He was probably pushing close to 90 at this point in time. But, boy, his eyes just lit up when he saw that B-25 again. And he started telling tales about how cold it was up there. He says, I thought Oklahoma was a hot place to be, but you'd get up there in that plane, and it was freezing up there. They made a lot of training flights there. And he said, you know, we made a lot of training flights to Dallas. You know why? And I said, no, not offhand. He says, well, Oklahoma was dry, and Texas had beer, so we made beer runs down to Dallas and brought it back up for the troops up there at Frederick Army Airfield. My dad was there for about 2.5 years, told me a lot about the weather in Oklahoma. You know, the first tornado warning was there in Oklahoma where they scrambled Air Force planes back in the mid to late 40s whenever they thought there might be tornadoes down there. The pilots would run to the planes, fly them to Arkansas or fly them to Missouri somewhere to get them out of the way of the of the tornadoes that were down there. And that was the first real action taken by the government in tornado warnings was back in the 1940s.
Well, they had a lot of planes, and you didn't want any of them to crash into each other or all the nice things you weathermen make those tornadoes do.
Oh, yeah, and it wasn't just the tornadoes. It was the large hail, too. As the hail would beat up a plane and knock the windshield out, too. So anything that was, you know, out on the field, they would try and get in a hangar, anything at all to try and keep those planes safe when they had bad weather.
Wow, so is that how your dad finished the war?
He was about to go overseas. He had orders to go overseas. They were gonna fly over in Europe. And as he got to New York, all of a sudden VE Day, yep. Germany was done, and they had his plans canceled at that point in time. But he was ready to go to combat at that point. He wasn't a pilot at that point, but he did fly in planes, navigator, whatever. He was good at geography and landmarks and all that. After the war, he was very close to becoming career military. He really liked the military, but his parents were getting older back in Chicago, and he felt he had to go back and help take care of them. But the skills that he learned in the Army were just lifelong benefit to him. He became the scoutmaster of our Boy Scout troop growing up. He started, after he got out of the service, working the line at Bell and Howell in Chicago. They made film cameras for about 75 cents an hour. And on the condition that they would allow him to work his way up, and he eventually worked his way up to be the chief liaison engineer for Bell and Howell. Very supportive of the military all his life. He was a proud member of the American Legion from when he got out of the war there in 46 until he passed away in 2004.
At what point did you enter his life?
I came 10 months after my parents got married, so I was barely legal.
Okay.
But my parents got married older because my dad was in the service. My mother sang for the USO and played piano and danced with the troops out of the Chicago area. There was a gentleman who owned a department store in Winnetka, Illinois, by the name of Abe Fell, and he decided he was going to sponsor his own USO troop. So they would drive up to Fort Sheridan, Army base up there at Highland Park,
yeah,
to Great Lakes Naval Training Center, Glenview Naval Air Station. They moved out to Rockford, Illinois, where they were, they did boot camp for a lot of the kids there that were coming out. So it was really, they had a lot in common. But I really thank my grandparents and my parents for being so perceptive. You know, in Scripture, Samuel prayed for both wisdom and discernment. And wisdom is important, but discernment is too. I remember what Ronald Reagan said once about how so many of his friends knew so much, but they also knew so much that wasn't true. So you have to be able to discern and learn truth from what isn't truth.
Very true. Bill, thank you. Thank you for taking time today, and thank you for honoring your dad and sharing those great dad stories on this Father's Day show. I appreciate you, Brad.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Colonel.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Get a bench and some good weights. You should be about 100 pounds by now. Do an even 100 bench presses, 20 at a time. And once your Ranger ready, then stand at ease. In accordance with the U.S. Flag Code, all Spartan Nash retail stores collect customers' old, worn, faded, or frayed American flags. In partnership with local veterans groups, we properly retire the flags we collect, a program we have offered since Veterans Day 2015.
It's part of Spartan Nash's commitment to patriotism and to serving our military heroes and their families. To find a store near you, visit SpartanNash.com.
Ready for a great day on the boat?
Oh, yeah. Hand me that cooler, will you?
Okay. That everything?
Food, sunscreen, tackle, bait, life jackets?
Nah, we won't need them.
Yeah, but I kind of promised my wife.
No, life jacket. That's a deal breaker, Robert.
Yeah, and I promised my daughter.
Come on, Daddy.
Hand me one of those life jackets, will you?
Yeah. This message brought to you by the National Safe Boating Council and the women who nag you. love you.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com. Please tune in to Living Consciously, where myself and my co-host will entertain you, inform you, and educate you in certain modalities. Living consciously is something that we really must learn to do, because that way you'll know what's going on around you. This show can be heard at 2 p.m. every Friday on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Thank you.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or do it on Facebook. Hey, Skip, what's the first one?
Mary, the mother of a Marine, really appreciated the interview with the lady who took Holocaust survivors to Poland. It made great sense to her that they also took young Israeli soldiers.
Agree, Mary. That was a great event, a great idea.
And Tim, an Army vet, liked the comparison of police and the military. He'd never thought of the similarities before.
Tim, we sheepdogs do have a lot in common, don't we? Okay, well, now it's time to honor a wonderful vet who's no longer with us. Gottfried Armin Fritz Fradelli was born on June 26, 1917 in Wisconsin at a home that was located above the family's cheese factory. At 18, Fritz hitchhiked and rode the rails to Colorado, Wyoming, and California. He worked at two different dairies and cheese manufacturing companies. Fritz enlisted in the Army in 1939, was assigned to the Horse Artillery. A sergeant at the end of his two-year hitch, Fritz shortly thereafter joined up for the Army Air Corps. An officer convinced him to apply for Officer's Candidate School. He was commissioned a second lieutenant in 1943. Fritz was assigned to the 363rd Field Artillery Battalion in the 96th Infantry Division as a forward observer. His unit deployed to the Pacific and was in the fifth wave in the invasion of Leyte. Then Fritz went into the second wave on Okinawa. There he was shot through the neck by a Japanese sniper. He lay on a stretcher on the beach for 3 days, stable but totally paralyzed from the neck down, before being placed on a hospital ship. Fritz was admitted to the Letterman Army Hospital in San Francisco. After 7 months, he was able to walk again. He was medically discharged in October 1945 with 100% disability. In 1946, he enrolled in the University of Wisconsin and earned a degree in dairy science. He married Helen Bradfield on September 17, 1949, then moved to Tampico, Mexico, where he started a dairy business. They had four sons and lived there till 1962, when the dairy business was federalized. They returned to the U.S. and restarted their lives in San Antonio, Texas. Three of his four sons went into the military with ROTC commissions. The fourth son became a medical doctor. Fritz lived a rich and rewarding life until his death on December 22, 2004.
Colonel, he really gave a lot to his country, didn't he?
He did. Wow, I can't even imagine some of that. Well, it's military history time. Skip, lead out, bro.
On 17 June 1775, British General William Howe landed his troops on the Charlestown Peninsula overlooking Boston, Massachusetts, and led them against Breed's Hill, a fortified American position just below Bunker Hill. As the British advanced in columns, American General William Prescott reportedly told his men, "Don't one of you fire until you see the whites of their eyes." When the Redcoats were within 40 yards, the Americans let loose with a lethal barrage of musket fire, throwing the British into retreat. After reforming his lines, Howe attacked again, with much the same result. Prescott's men were now low on ammunition, though, and when Howe led his men up the hill for a third time, they reached the redoubts and engaged the Americans in hand-to-hand combat. The outnumbered Americans were forced to retreat. The Patriots' gunfire had cut down nearly 1,000 enemy troops, including 92 officers. Of the 370 Patriots who fell, most were struck while in retreat. The British had won the so-called Battle of Bunker Hill and Breed's Hill, and the Charlestown Peninsula fell firmly under British control. Despite losing their strategic positions, the battle was a morale builder for the Americans, convincing them that patriotic dedication could overcome superior British military might.
And it did. And on 20 June 1864, during the Civil War, General John Bell Hood's Confederate force attacked William Sherman's troops outside of Atlanta, but they were repulsed with heavy losses. This was Hood's first battle as the head of the Army of Tennessee. He had assumed command from Joseph Johnson just 2 days before, when Confederate President Jefferson Davis replaced Johnson after Sherman had backed Johnson into this key southern city. Davis selected the more offensive-minded Hood to defeat Sherman. Hood wasted little time. He planned to strike the Union Army as it crossed the Peachtree Creek. The waterway was deep, and the Confederates destroyed all the bridges on the retreat into Atlanta. Hood suspected that Yankees were most vulnerable when only part of their force was across the creek, so he planned a two-pronged attack to hold part of the Union Army at bay while the rest could be pinned against Peachtree Creek. It was a sound plan, but poorly executed. Scheduled for 1 p.m., the attack was delayed for 3 hours while Hood's troops shifted into position. The overall assault lacked a general coordination, so units charged the Union positions piecemeal. 20,000 rebels assaulted the same number of Yankees. The Confederates achieved some success, but couldn't drive the Union troops back. After 3 hours, Hood ordered a halt to the advance. He did try again later.
On 19 June 1944, in what would become known as the Marianas Turkey Shoot, U.S. carrier-based fighters decimated the Japanese fleet with only a minimum of losses in the Battle of the Philippine Sea. The security of the Marianas Islands in the Western Pacific were vital to Japan. Our Fifth Fleet was on its way west as backup for the invasion of Saipan and the rest of the Marianas, but the Japanese admiral decided to challenge the American fleet, ordering 430 of his planes launched from aircraft carriers to attack. In what became the greatest carrier battle of the war, our Navy, having already picked up the Japanese craft on radar, proceeded to shoot down over 300 aircraft and sink 2 aircraft carriers, losing only 29 of their own planes. It was described in the aftermath as a turkey shoot. Admiral Zawa, believing his missing planes had landed on their Guam airbase, maintained his position in the Philippine Sea, allowing for a second attack of our fighter planes to shoot down an additional 65 Japanese planes and sink another carrier. In total, the Japanese lost 480 aircraft, three-quarters of its total, not to mention most of the crews.
And that's military history for today. Skip, it's time for the Armed America Report. Let's do it this week.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. Listen, folks, evil exists. Someday evil will visit your door. Will you be ready? If you're not, now is the time to start looking into it and learning the skills necessary to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Soundly asleep in her bedroom in Kansas City, a 74-year-old woman awakened to the sound of a burglar breaking her door open. Startled, the woman grabbed her recently purchased handgun and met the intruder at the top of the stairs, where she took aim and fired a single, fatal shot. EMS arrived on the scene to save the life of the homeowner, who suffered a heart attack after the incident.
Colonel, I love stories like this, primarily, you know, especially when you've got like a 74-year-old woman, right? I get a lot of elderly people in my class, and elderly to me is anyone who's older than I am. So
careful there, dude.
Well, you know what I mean, Colonel. But, you know, these little old ladies, these grandmas, great-grandmas, come out onto the range, and they'll be shooting. And a lot of them can only handle a .22 caliber pistol because of the recoil, and yep, they can't rack the slide, all of this stuff. And some other big, tough guys, right, will ridicule them. But the truth is, I did the research on this lady. She was shooting a .22 caliber pistol. But, you know, when you shoot them in the head, it doesn't matter how big the bullet is. It really doesn't.
And my wife shoots a .22 mag.
Yes. That's right.
That will do some serious damage.
Definitely. You know, and the bottom line is, you basically, you shoot the highest caliber that you can safely and accurately control. And if it's a 9mm, fine. If it's a 45, fine. But if it's a 22, that doesn't mean that you just can't go armed. It just means you have to be a better shot. And headshots, that's nothing to scoff at.
Yes, indeed. And I suspect the late burglar, if he were here, would agree with you.
Absolutely, Colonel.
Our movie of the month is Marcos Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Please go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. This is a very appropriate movie. You want to see it. And we'll review it at the end of the month. I'd really appreciate your input. The book giveaway this month is Renee Nichelle's Always My Hero. To get in on the drawing, send me an email to denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com and put Always My Hero in the subject line. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, General Arnold Pinero will join us to discuss our nation's challenges. We'll also talk with Steve Wilson from HelpVet.net about helping vets. Pilot Randy Norton will discuss World War II aircraft, and he knows a lot about them. And I'll shoot the bull with combat veteran Tom Norton.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.
Fisher House is a huge part of the recovery for wounded, injured, and ill service members and veterans. They provide a comfortable, safe place for their families. It's not a hotel. These houses are located at military and VA medical centers all over the U.S. and around the world. They have a common kitchen, laundry facilities, a warm dining room, and an inviting living room, too. Help make a difference in the lives of military and veterans' families. Learn how you can help Fisher House today at fisherhouse.org.
Killing terrorist combatants ought not to be a crime. Yet Lieutenant Clint Lawrence is at Fort Leavenworth for 19 years. Green Beret Major Matthew Goldstein and Navy SEAL Chief Edward Gallagher are also accused of killing the enemy in combat. To restore freedom to those who fought for ours, sign my petition at restorefreedom.info. Rally for unfairly accused combat warriors. Restorefreedom.info. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This message is paid for by the Uniformed Services League.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the U.S. is going to keep putting economic and political pressure on Iran's government to change their ways. The secretary met with military leaders on Tuesday and says this is not a new problem.
We all have to remember this isn't just 2.5 years or 5 years. This is 40 years of Iranian activity that has led us to this point.
As to the U.S. sending 1,000 more troops to the Middle East,
we are there to deter aggression. President Trump does not want war, and we will continue to communicate that message while doing the things that are necessary to protect American interests.
Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan is stepping aside. The president tweeted that Shanahan is removing himself for consideration for the permanent position. The president says Army Secretary Mark Esper will be the new acting Secretary of Defense. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
So you sit down and do your budget, and you look at all your monthly costs and your bills and your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. That is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your health care. And when it comes to health care sharing ministries, MediShare is really the gold standard. It's been around for 25 years and has more than 400,000 members. It's been around so long and grown so much because it works. And whether you're single or married or have kids, this could make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. $500 a month can more than cover a car payment or payback loans, whatever. So join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Here's the number to call. They are incredibly kind and helpful to talk to. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Fans of President Trump have converged on an arena in Orlando for President Trump's re-election kickoff. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports from Washington.
Some people started lining up for today's big rally last night.
It's part of the process if you're going to be first in line.
The president tweeting that there are about 100,000 requests for tickets, although there are only 20,000 seats at Amway Center. Still, people are hopeful they'll get in.
We're here to support Trump. We love our president.
Support the greatest president of all time.
Police, meanwhile, are bracing for large crowds of supporters as well as large crowds of protesters.
Senators are questioning President Trump's trade policies and tariffs on Capitol Hill. Republican Senator from Iowa, Chuck Grassley.
$22 billion out of the pockets of hardworking Americans is not in our national interest. I urge the administration to do everything it can to use tariffs as a last resort option.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York is ramping up the rhetoric against the Trump administration's work to stem mass migration, calling centers where illegals are being detained concentration camp. Art Del Cueto is the vice president of the National Border Patrol Council. He reacts to AOC's comments.
When any individual makes that reference, it loses all the interest in me. It's disgusting to compare concentration camps to what the men and women are doing here protecting our country. In my eyes, honestly, you lose credibility. I've had it, up to here with all these individuals constantly trying to compare concentration camps to what we're doing. I was just at one of the detention facilities. The kids were outside their cell because we have so many of them. They were out on the floor playing puzzles. They were watching movies.
Del Cueto also discusses the millions of people that President Trump says will be deported starting next week.
I mean, it's a welcome sight. We're going to have to wait and see what happens. I can tell you that the ICE agents are going to be very excited about, finally being able to go out there and do their job. And if they need assistance, I'm sure there's other agencies within DHS that are more than willing to help them.
Control of the estate of singer Aretha Franklin is being decided in a Michigan court. A hearing was held on Monday in Wayne County where attorneys and family members of Franklin showed up to see if any decision would be made. The court will decide if any of the four handwritten wills she left behind are valid. You can check us out online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the U.S. is going to keep putting economic and political pressure on Iran's government to change their ways. The secretary met with military leaders on Tuesday and says this is not a new problem.
We all have to remember this isn't just 2.5 years or 5 years. This is 40 years of Iranian activity that has led us to this point.
As to the U.S. sending 1,000 more troops to the Middle East,
we are there to deter aggression. President Trump does not want war, and we will continue to communicate that message while doing the things that are necessary to protect American interests.
Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan is stepping aside. The president tweeted that Shanahan is removing himself for consideration for the permanent position. The president says Army Secretary Mark Esper will be the new acting Secretary of Defense. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
So you sit down and do your budget, and you look at all your monthly costs and your bills and your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. That is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your health care. And when it comes to health care sharing ministries, MediShare is really the gold standard. It's been around for 25 years and has more than 400,000 members. It's been around so long and grown so much because it works. And whether you're single or married or have kids, this could make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. $500 a month can more than cover a car payment or pay back loans, whatever. So join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Here's the number to call. They are incredibly kind and helpful to talk to. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Fans of President Trump have converged on an arena in Orlando for President Trump's re-election kickoff. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports from Washington.
Some people started lining up for today's big rally last night.
It's part of the process if you're going to be first in line.
The president tweeting that there are about 100,000 requests for tickets, although there are only 20,000 seats at Amway Center. Still, people are hopeful they'll get in.
We're here to support Trump. We love our president.
Support the greatest president of all time.
Police, meanwhile, are bracing for large crowds of supporters as well as large crowds of protesters.
Senators are questioning President Trump's trade policies and tariffs on Capitol Hill. Republican Senator from Iowa, Chuck Grassley.
$22 billion out of the pockets of hardworking Americans is not in our national interest. I urge the administration to do everything it can to use tariffs as a last resort option.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York is ramping up the rhetoric against the Trump administration's work to stem mass migration, calling centers where illegals are being detained concentration camp. Art Del Cueto is the vice president of the National Border Patrol Council. He reacts to AOC's comments.
When any individual makes that reference, it loses all the interest in me. It's disgusting to compare concentration camps to what the men and women are doing here protecting our country. In my eyes, honestly, you lose credibility. I've had it, up to here with all these individuals constantly trying to compare concentration camps to what we're doing. I was just at one of the detention facilities. The kids were outside their cell because we have so many of them. They were out on the floor playing puzzles. They were watching movies.
Del Cueto also discusses the millions of people that President Trump says will be deported starting next week.
It's a welcome sight. We're going to have to wait and see what happens. I can tell you that the ICE agents are going to be very excited about, finally being able to go out there and do their job. And if they need assistance, I'm sure there's other agencies within DHS that are more than willing to help them.
Control of the estate of singer Aretha Franklin is being decided in a Michigan court. A hearing was held on Monday in Wayne County where attorneys and family members of Franklin showed up to see if any decision would be made. The court will decide if any of the four handwritten wills she left behind are valid. You can check us out online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.